你没想到的问题，他告诉你。
大家好，这里是北京外语广播正在播出的大学生英语在线 Question of the Day， 我是米莎米歇尔，我们今天的嘉宾依然是壮壮老师。
Hello everyone, how are you going?
我们都很好。
Okay, today we're going to again introduce two passages, two speeches on TED events. 两段的 TED, 没错 TED Talk.这一个两段呢都是关于 museums 话说这个博物馆在北京也有不少的博物馆，那么博物馆呢随着它的这个科技的发展，它会有一些新的趋势，同时呢还有一些奇奇怪怪的博物馆。我们今天听的这个第一段呢就是 The Museum of Four in the Morning。我首先就被这个题目所吸引，为什么是早晨四点的博物馆呢？难道说那里发生了什么凶杀之类的哈？
好多秘密。
对，所以呢，我要先给大家介绍一下哈。Beware, Rice, who is the speaker, has a contagious obsession with 4 a.m.At TED 2007, the poet shared what was then a minor fixation with a time that kept popping up everywhere. After the talk, emails started pouring in with an avalanche of hilarious references, from the cover of Crochet Today magazine to the opening scene of The Metamorphosis, a lyric...peek into his museum of four in the morning, which overflow with treasures. Rives, performance poet, multimedia artist. He is also a storyteller. He has been called the first 20 poet using images, video, and technology to bring his words to life.
这个人呢很有意思啊，他呢就是身兼数职。首先呢他是一个 performance artist, 就是表演艺术家，而且还是个 storyteller, 而且还是一个诗人。所以我每次我都特别喜欢看这个讲话人他的身份那个 title 是什么，千奇百怪的 title, 啊这个还不算奇怪。这个人呢还自己做那个 pop-up,就 3D 儿童的书，就是你一打开那个折纸就站起来了，对，然后呢他就是挺有才的这么一个人。凌晨四点这个数对于他来讲就是一个有魔力的数字，老往他脑子里边跳。最后呢他就发现呢这个时间有一些重要的意义，并且把相关的东西呢搜集到一个博物馆里面去展出。而且他讲这个博物馆讲话推出以后呢，他就收到了雪片一般的来信 email。好，刚才咱们听到那个词 avalanche, 那是雪崩一般的，
雪崩
引发了巨大的反响。好，现在我们就来听听看。
好的。
The most romantic thing to ever happen to me online started out the way most things do, without me, and not online. On December 10th, 1896, the man on the medal, Alfred Nobel, died. 100 years later, exactly, actually, December 10th, 1996, this charming lady, Wisława Szymborska, won the Nobel Prize for Literature.She's a Polish poet. She's a big deal, obviously, but back in 96, I thought I had never heard of her. And when I checked out her work, I found this sweet little poem, Four in the Morning. The hour from night to day, the hour from side to side, the hour for those past 30, and it goes on. But as soon as I read this poem, I fell for it, hard. So hard, I suspected we must have met somewhere before. Had I shared an elevator ride with this poem...Did I flirt with this poem in a coffee shop somewhere? I could not place it, and it bugged me. And then in the coming week or two, I would just be watching an old movie, and this would happen.
Well, you should have come to the first party. We didn't get home till around 4 in the morning.
My roommates would have the TV on, and this would happen.
Boy, I was up till 4 in the morning watching that Omen trilogy.
Mm. Be listening to music, and this would happen.
4 o'clock in the morning.
So you can see what was going on, right? Obviously, the demigods of coincidence were just messing with me. Some people get a number stuck in their head. You may recognize a certain name or a tune. Some people get nothing, but 4 in the morning was in me now, but mildly, like a groin injury. I always assumed it would just go away on its own eventually, and I never talked about it with anybody. But...It did not, and I totally did. In 2007, I was invited to speak at TED for the second time, and since I was still an authority on nothing, I thought, what if I made a multimedia presentation on a topic so niche it is actually inconsequential or actually cockamamie. So, my talk had some of my 4 in the morning examples, but it also had examples from my fellow TED speakers that year. I found 4 in the morning in a novel by Isabel Allende. I found a really great one in the autobiography of Bill Clinton. Found a couple in the work of Matt Groening, although Matt Groening told me later that he could not make my talk because it was a morning session and I gathered that he is not an early riser. However, had Matt been there, he would have seen this mock conspiracy theory that was unfreaking canny for me to assemble. It was totally contrived just for that room, just for that moment. That's how we did it in the pre-TED.com days. It was fun. That was pretty much it. When I got home, though, the emails started coming in from people who had seen the talk live, beginning with, and this is still my favorite, here's another one for your collection. It's the friends you can call up at 4 a.m. that matter. The sentiment is Marlene Dietrich. The email itself was from another very sexy European type, TED curator Chris Anderson. Chris found this quote on a coffee cup or something, and I'm thinking, this man is the Typhoid Mary of ideas worth spreading, and I have infected him. I am contagious, which was confirmed less than a week later when a Hallmark employee scanned and sent an actual greeting card with that same quotation. As a bonus, she hooked me up with a second one they make. It says, just knowing I can call you at 4 in the morning if I need to makes me not really need to, which I love, because together these are like, Hallmark, when you care enough to send the very best twice, phrased slightly differently. I was not surprised at the TEDster and New Yorker magazine overlap. A bunch of people sent me this when it came out. It's 4 a.m. Maybe you'd sleep better if you bought some crap. I was surprised at the TEDster Rugrats overlap. More than one person sent me this.
It's 4 o'clock in the morning. Why on earth are you making chocolate pudding?
Because I've lost control of my life. Yeah.
And then there was the lone TEDster who was disgruntled. I had overlooked what he considers to be a classic.
Get up. I'm not kidding. Come on.
Is that an accident?
No, it's not an accident. You wanted to get out of the house anyway, right?
Well, not at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So that's Close Encounters, and the main characters all worked up because aliens, momentously, have chosen to show themselves to Earthlings at 4 in the morning, which does make that a very solid example. Those were all really solid examples. They did not get me any closer to understanding why I thought I recognized this one particular poem, but they followed the pattern. They played along, right? 4 in the morning as this scapegoat hour when all these dramatic occurrences allegedly occur. Maybe this was some kind of cliche that had never been taxonomized before. Maybe I was on the trail of a new meme or something. Just when things, getting pretty interesting, things got really interesting. TED.com launched later that year with a bunch of videos from past talks, including mine, and I started receiving 4 in the morning citations from what seemed like every time zone on the planet. Much of it was content I never would have found on my own if I was looking for it, and I was not. I don't know anybody with juvenile diabetes. I probably would have missed the booklet, Grilled Cheese at 4 o'clock in the morning. I do not subscribe to Crochet Today magazine, although it looks delightful. Take note of those clock ends. This is a college student suggestion for what a 4 in the morning gang sign should look like. People sent me magazine ads. They took photographs in grocery stores. I got a ton of graphic novels and comics. A lot of good quality work, too. The Sandman, Watchmen, there's a very cute example here from Calvin and Hobbes. In fact, the oldest citation anybody sent in was from a cartoon from the Stone Age. Take a look.
Like how early?
Like at 4 a.m., that's how early.
And the flip side of the timeline, this is from the 31st century. 1,000 years from now, people are still doing this.
The time is 4 a.m.
I chose a spectrum. I received so many songs, TV shows, movies, like from dismal to famous. I could give you a 4-hour playlist. If I just stick to modern male movie stars, I keep it to the length of about a commercial. Here's your sampler.
What time is it?
4 o'clock.
4 a.m.
It's like 4.
4 o'clock in the morning.
4 o'clock in the morning.
I'm afraid it's the witch.
4 a.m.
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock in the morning.
4 in the morning.
It's 4 a.m.
We're supposed to be back here at 4 o'clock. 4 o'clock if we're bored. We don't return here until 4 o'clock. Oh, 400. 4 a.m. 4 o'clock.
It's 4 o'clock. Yeah. So, somewhere along the line, I realized I have a hobby I didn't know I wanted. And it is crowdsourced. But I was also thinking what you might be thinking, which is really, couldn't you do this with any hour of the day? First of all, you are not getting clips like that about 4 in the afternoon. Secondly, I did a little research. You know, I was kind of interested. If this is confirmation bias, there is so much confirmation, I am biased. Literature probably shows it best. There are a couple 3 in the mornings in Shakespeare. There's a 5 in the morning. There are 7, 4 in the mornings, and they're all very dire. In Measure for Measure, it's the call time for the executioner. Tolstoy gives Napoleon insomnia at 4 in the morning right before battle in War and Peace. Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre's got kind of a pivotal 4 in the morning, as does Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights. Lolita has a creepy 4 in the morning. Huckleberry Finn has one in dialect. Someone sent in H.G. Wells' The Invisible Man. Someone else sent in Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. The Great Gatsby spends the last 4 in the morning of his life waiting for a lover who never shows. And the most famous wake-up in literature, perhaps, The Metamorphosis. First paragraph, main character wakes up transformed into a giant cockroach. But we already know, you know, cockroach notwithstanding, something is up with this guy. Why? His alarm is set for 4 o'clock in the morning. What kind of person would do that? This kind of person would do that.
Top of the hour, time for the morning news. But of course, there is no news yet. Everyone's still asleep in their comfy, comfy beds.
Exactly. So that's Lucy from the Peanuts, Mommy Dearest, Rocky, First Day of Training, Nelson Mandela, First Day in Office, and Bart Simpson, which combined with the cockroach would give you one hell of a dinner party and gives me yet another category, people waking up, in my big old database. Just imagine that your friends and your family have heard that you collect, say, stuffed polar bears, and they send them to you. Even if you don't really, at a certain point, you totally collect stuffed polar bears. And your collection is probably pretty kick-ass. And when I got to that point, I embraced it. I got my curator on. I started fact-checking, downloading, illegally screen-grabbing. I started archiving. My hobby had become a habit, and my habit gave me possibly the world's most eclectic Netflix queue. At one point, it went Guys and Dolls the Musical, Last Tango in Paris, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Porn Star, Legend of Ron Jeremy. Why Porn Star, Legend of Ron Jeremy? Because someone told me I would find this clip there.
I was born in Flushing, Queens, on March 12, 1953, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Of course he was. Yeah. Not only does it seem to make sense, it also answers the question, what do Ron Jeremy and Simone de Beauvoir have in common? Simone de Beauvoir begins her entire autobiography with the sentence, I was born at 4 o'clock in the morning, which I had because someone else had emailed it to me. And when they did, I had another bump up in my intrigue for this, because porn star Ron Jeremy and feminist Simone de Beauvoir are not just different people. They are different people that have this thing connecting them. And I did not know if that is trivia or knowledge or inadvertent expertise, but I did wonder, is there maybe a cooler way to do this? So, last October in gentleman scholar tradition, I put the entire collection online as Museum of 4 in the Morning. You can click on that red refresh button. It will take you at random to one of hundreds of snippets that are in the collection. Here is a knockout poem by Billy Collins called Forgetfulness.
No wonder you rise in the middle of the night to look up the date of a famous battle in a book on war. No wonder the moon in the window seems to have drifted out of a love poem that you used to know by heart.
So the first hour of this project was satisfying. A Bollywood actor sang a line on a DVD in a cafe half a globe away. A teenager made an Instagram video of it and sent it to me, a stranger. Less than a week later, though, I received a little bit of grace. I received a poignant tweet. It was brief. It just said, reminds me of an ancient mixtape. The name was a pseudonym, actually, or a pseudo-pseudonym. As soon as I saw the initials and the profile pic, I knew immediately, my whole body knew immediately who this was, and I knew immediately what mixtape she was talking about. LD was my college romance. This is in the early 90s. I was an undergrad. She was a grad student in the library sciences department. Not the kind of librarian that takes her glasses off, lets her hair down suddenly. She's smoking hot. She was already smoking hot. She was super dorky. And we had a December-May romance, meaning we started dating in December, and by May, she had graduated and became my one that got away. But her mixtape did not get away. I have kept this mixtape in a box with notes and postcards, not just from LD, from my life, but for decades. It's the kind of box where if I have a girlfriend, I tend to hide it from her, and if I had a wife, I'm sure I would share it with her. But the story with this mixtape is there are 7 songs per side, but no song titles. Instead, LD has used the U.S. Library of Congress classification system, including page numbers, to leave me clues. When I got this mixtape, I put it in my cassette player. I took it to the campus library, her library. I found 14 books on the shelves. I remember bringing them all to my favorite corner table, and I read poems paired to songs, like food to wine. Paired, I can tell you, like saddle shoes to a cobalt blue vintage cotton dress. I did this again last October. I'm sitting there, I got new earbuds, old Walkman. I realized this is just the kind of extravagance I used to take for granted, even when I was extravagant. And then I thought, good for him. PG is Slavic literature. 7000 series is Polish literature. Z9824 is a collection of 70 poems. Page 31 is Wisława Szymborska's poem paired with Paul Simon's Peace Like a River.
Four in the morning, I woke up from out of my dream.
刚才我们听到的这一块呢，就是早晨4点所发生的奇怪的事儿。我觉得就是不光要听这个奇怪的 museum， 我对我震惊很大的就是这个人的思路。大家一般都不会想，一提博物馆啊，就是古董啊，是吧，艺术品啊。但是呢，这个老外他挺有创意的。
说到这个，我想起来一个秘密啊，也不是秘密，是一个电影叫《浮生一日》，也是一个外国电影，大概是一个纪录片。它这个是博物馆属于收集同一时间的不同东西，它那个是记录全世界各地的人从早到晚的生活。比如说这个法国人干什么呢？然后是早上某个钟点，然后都是日常的生活，比如说爸爸教孩子刮胡子啊，什么什么的，一整天全世界各地的人来记录。
哟，这个很有意思，这也是一个就是说人家会这个思路和看待世界的角度非常有意思啊。好，然后下面我们要给大家介绍的呢是叫做也是一个博物馆，这个博物馆呢它是在线的啊，这是由一位印度讲话者所讲的，他的印度口音还不太重。话说印度口音呢在北美
不太重
啊，真是不太重，就只有一点点。这个人呢他的头衔是 technologist， 大家知道 IT 这个技术发展呢
已经被印度人包了，
没错，这个印度人算是一支强大的力量哈。然后呢这个人的头衔呢是 is the head of art project， his efforts to bring the world's greatest museums onto the web at googleartproject.com，
线上的博物馆，
没错，
咱现在也有了，咱抗日战争纪念馆
是吧，
线上的。
而且呢他在这个讲话过程中他会带着你看，就是比真实的博物馆还要逼真那样的感觉，而且特别细。This speaker is a group marketing manager for Google. He's worked for the Android team in the Mountain View and has led marketing efforts for Google's GEO products. His passion for art led him to initiate a 20% time project to bring museums onto the web, which turned into the ambitious new art project.一会儿你在听的时候呢可能就会思考哈，像考题里边不管是托福还是雅思他都会问未来几十年什么东西的发展趋势。尤其是雅思口语，如果是碰到你 part 2描述的是博物馆，那 part 3他有可能他就让你说一下博物馆未来发展的趋势。其实 going online is quite a trend, considerable trend. 所以呢这个思路呢大家在写作的时候也可以用。
My name is Amit and 18 months ago I had another job at Google.And I pitched this idea of doing something with museums and art to my boss, who's actually here. And she allowed me to do it. And it took 18 months A lot of fun negotiations and stories I can tell you with 17 very interesting museums from 9 countries, but I'm going to focus on the demo. There are a lot of stories about why we did this. I think my personal story is explained very simply in the slide, and it's access. And I grew up in India. I had a great education, I'm not complaining, but I didn't have access to a lot of these museums and these artworks. And so when I started traveling and going to these museums, I started learning a lot. And while working at Google, I tried to put this desire to make it more accessible with technology together. So we formed a team, a great team of people, and we started doing this. I'm going to probably get into the demo and then, you know, tell you a couple of the interesting things we've had since launch. So, simple, you come to googleartproject.com, you look around all these museums here, you got the Uffizi, you got the MoMA, the Hermitage, the Rijks, the Van Gogh. I'm going to actually get to one of my favorites, the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York. Two ways of going in, very simple, click, and bang, you're in this museum. Doesn't matter where you are, Bombay, Mexico, it doesn't really matter. You move around, you have fun, you want to navigate around the museum, open the plan up, and in one click, jump. You're in there, you want to go to the end of the corridor, keep going, have fun, you know, explore. Thanks, I haven't come to the best part. So now I'm in front of one of my favorite paintings, The Harvesters by Peter Bruegel at the Met. I see this plus sign. If the museum has given us the image, you click on it. Now, this is one of the images. So this is all the metadata information for those of you who are truly interested in art. You can click this, but I'm going to click this off right now. And this is one of these images that we captured in what we call gigapixel technology. So this image, for example, has close to, I think, around 10 billion pixels. And I get a lot of people asking me, what do you get for 10 billion pixels? So I'm going to try and show you what you really get for 10 billion pixels. You can zoom around very simply. You know, you see some fun stuff happening here. You know, I love this guy. His expression is priceless. But then you really want to go deep. And so I started playing around, and I found something going on over here. And I was like, hold on, that sounds interesting. Went in, and I started noticing that these kids were actually beating something. I did a little research, spoke to a couple of my contacts at the Met, and I actually found out that this is a game called Skol, which involves beating a goose with a stick on Shrove Tuesday. And apparently it was quite popular. I don't know why they did it, but, you know, I learned something about it. Now, just, you know, we're really deep in. You can really get the cracks. Now, just to give you some perspective, I'm going to zoom out so you really see what you get. Here is where we were, and this is the painting. The best is yet to come, so thank you. So now, let's just quickly jump into the MoMA. So another one of my favorites, the Starry Night. Now, the example I showed you was all about finding details. But what if you want to see brush strokes? And what if you want to see, you know, how Van Gogh actually created this masterpiece? You zoom in, you really go in. I'm going to go to one of my favorite parts in this painting, and I'm really going to get to the cracks. This is the Starry Night, I think, you know, never seen like this before. I'm going to show you my other favorite feature. There's a lot of other stuff here, but I don't have time. This is the real cool part. It's called collections. Any one of you, anybody, doesn't matter if you're rich, if you're poor, if you have, you know, a fancy, you know, house, doesn't matter. You can go and create your own museum online. Create your own collection across all these images. Very simply, you go in, and I've created this called the Power of Zoom. You can just zoom around. This is the Ambassadors, based in the National Gallery. You can annotate this stuff, send it to your friends, and really get a conversation going about what you're feeling when you go through these masterpieces. So I think in conclusion, for me, the main thing is that all the amazing stuff here does not really come from Google. It doesn't, in my opinion, even come from the museums. Probably shouldn't say that. It really comes from these artists. And, you know, that's been my humbling experience in this. I mean, I hope in this digital medium that we do justice to their artwork and represent it properly online. And the biggest question I get asked nowadays is, did you do this to replicate the experience of going to a museum? And the answer is no, it's to supplement the experience. And that's it. Thank you.
这就是今天我们跟大家分享关于博物馆的内容，希望对大家的生活和考试都有帮助。我们下次节目见。
下一期大学生英语在线将继续为您带来 TED Talk 的内容。 接下来您将听到的是私房拷贝。 Coming up next is home video。
Treat my pain.